This is URN Sport.
Welcome back to the Thursday Sports Show. Nottingham Forest. Now, we didn't actually talk about them too much at the end of last semester. We suggested that they would possibly be having a slightly bad run over Christmas, and they managed to get through that. But we're going to talk about that in a bit. But we're going to talk first about transfers, because as we all know, it's the 16th of January today. Transfer rumours are flying all about. Not only are they flying about people like Jadon Sancho and Mbappe, they're also flying about Dwight Gayle. And that's where we find ourselves.
Apparently Will Grigg's coming to Swindon.
Well, there we go. Trying to get in Swindon, shoehorn them in.
I feel like I've got Swindon through every show I've ever done.
Quite possibly.
And why do they need him?
Because we lost Owen Doyle, who was the highest scoring striker in the whole of Europe.
R.I.P. Swindon.
the good news was we had Jerry Yates, who was the second highest scorer in League Two.
Yeah.
So we sort of...
Okay. The craziest thing about that was that he was loaned from Bradford, who are also in League Two. Like, why? Why?
Well, because he doesn't fit into Bradford's playing system, because Bradford play quite boring defensive football, whereas we play quite fast counter-attacking football. Sort of like a B-Tech Liverpool.
Liverpool.
Yeah. So, and he fits quite nicely into that. So the two times in his career he's gone really good goal scoring runs have been Swindon and Chesterfield, and we were playing quite similar 4-3-3, quite fast pace attacking way, and he doesn't fit into Bradford at all. But the reason they recalled him is because we're like their promotion rivals, and he scored 23 goals in 22 games for us. And I feel like that was a bit of a sticking point for them, and since he's gone back there, he's not scored a goal.
Oh,
well, I mean, it's not been long; it's been like a week.
It's been one game, but
he hasn't scored it. Yeah, he's on a duck.
But to be fair, we have got I think 8 or 9 players who are injured at the moment, and we've got 2 players in the first team who are back from injury. And despite that, we still beat Crewe, who are, I think, third in the league, 3-1 at the weekend.
Great Forest talk this.
Right, that's it. Swindon banned from the rest of the show. Transfer rumours, as I was suggesting, it looks like, well, I mean, it's pretty obvious, Nottingham Forest haven't exactly hidden it, that they are in search of a striker. First, it was Dwight Gayle, but then those talks are stalled because he wants to go to Leeds instead, so that's a big shame.
That's an interesting one.
Yeah. Nketiah is staying at Arsenal, but he didn't play for Leeds. But anyway, okay. Then other strikers include Andre Gray, Connor Wickham, Billy Sharp. Billy Sharp is an interesting one because he's loved by the fans at Sheffield United, but his manager has suggested that it is up to Sharp himself whether he wants to stay or whether he wants to leave. He's not going to stop him from leaving the club. And it's not just Forest that are interested in Sharp. It's a lot of Championship clubs. Because as we saw last season, he is so effective in this league. I mean, that goes for another couple players that they are also linked to Forest, with Glenn Murray of Brighton and Codger of Aston Villa, who is out of contract.
Well, I've seen the name reportedly reached an agreement with Barcelona for a midfielder, Marcus McGuain.
Marcus McGuain, yeah. Oh, he came through Arsenal.
Yeah.
He went to Barcelona.
He's on loan at Telstar in the Netherlands at the moment. But
he's on loan in the Dutch second division. He can't.
But apparently they might have reached a deal with him. He's a midfielder, which doesn't really solve their problems, because as Cam and I were talking about earlier, Lamucci's done quite a good job with the squad he's got, to be honest. Interesting fact, my girlfriend's friend sat next to Lamucci on a flight a couple of days ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Where was he going?
He was coming back from Dublin.
Okay.
Which I thought was really rogue in the middle of the season.
Okay, who's at Dublin? That's good that we know who he's scouting. I literally can't think of anybody.
He was with his wife, so
well, his wife might be the head scout. We don't know.
Probably just going for a couple of days away.
Well, yeah, probably be doing that in the middle of the season.
Well, that's what I said to Kate. I said if Richie Wellens, I said if the manager of my football team were on holiday at this point in the season, you know, I'd be calling for their head for their attitude towards the team. But anyway, the point being that he's done a good job with what he's got so far, but he definitely needs a bit more in the attacking region to sort of.
He need more goals.
With Rafa Mir going, with his loan being cut short, not that he really played much for us anyway, he's gone back to Wolves.
They've not really had a. proper striker for a couple of years.
They've
had a proper striker.
They have Graben.
They've got Lewis Graben.
He can't do it all. But he's actually got a really good goal scoring record. He just can't do it all. He's too old now.
But well, that's the thing. They've only had Graben for the last couple of years.
Yeah, I agree.
And you need multiple goal threats.
Yeah,
you can't
I agree.
Just have all your goals coming from one place.
Well, that's exactly what Forrest and Lamouchi are saying. They're saying that look, you know, there's not a lot of goals coming from midfield for Forrest, and so it's all being put on Graben, and he can't be scoring two or three goals a game. It's not going to happen, or even one goal a game. He's not that kind of player.
You can't play every game. That's not why they look at strikers. You can't have one striker playing every game, providing all your goals.
No. So, out of all the strikers that I've named, so Gayle and Nketiah, Gray, Nketiah's Wickham.
Just not happening.
Let's say they could happen. Sharp, Codger, and Murray. Who are you signing up?
I mean, if I think Glenn Murray's a pretty.
Glenn Murray's...
If you could get him, would be a good signing.
I think so, too.
Glenn Murray's a good all-round guy, but he's not a pure goal scorer in the way that some of the others are. Dwight Gale has got great record in the Championship. It just never worked in the Premier League. So him or Nketiah, it feels like, would be a lot more of what they...
And,
Those make sense, what they need. Which is why they're not happening.
In a way, though, a lot of these are quite short-term signings. The goal is to get promoted into Premier League. But you've also got to think, right, if we do manage to get promoted into Premier League, can we keep... Will this be a good enough strike force to sort of do well in the Premier League? It wouldn't be.
Well, because I mean, I guess the idea would be kind of almost what Villa did, where it's getting the Premier League and then buy someone with that Premier League money, because strikers are the most important, the most expensive thing on any market.
Yeah,
so
that's gone well for Villa so far.
Yeah, very true.
The problem is then they've focused on getting strikers from the Belgian League, which is completely questionable.
And then he gets injured for the rest of the season.
And then they're getting another one from the Belgian League, so.
But I think Andre Gray would be an interesting one because he's got a lot of pace. He is a good finisher, but I can't.
Would he go to Forest?
I can't see him going. Mm. I can't. Connor Wickham, he's been injured for about five years.
I forgot about Connor Wickham. Yeah. I think he got his 50th career goal or something recently. I was like, he should have scored more than that.
Yeah.
Well, it's because he was at Palace Rage and didn't play.
Yeah, he's had terrible problems with injury and also terrible problems with not being that good. Like he's like 25. Ooh, and
it's quite a big issue, not being good, isn't it?
Yeah. So
he was at a club above his level.
Yeah, I think he could do well at a Championship club.
He could turn into one of these Jordan Rhodes type guys where he's just in the Championship forever, as opposed to being a Premier League club and not playing.
He's got good physicality. He's got a decent finish on him. I think he could do well. As long as you know, he is a striker that will also work quite hard as well in terms of what Lewis Graben will do. Billy Sharp, I think, would be a great signing
for 6 months. Wickham would probably be the best combination of the two.
Yeah,
like, a lot of these other guys are great for the next 6 months. Get you promoted, try and get another guy there.
Yeah,
Wickham probably be the best in terms of like beyond that.
Yeah, it should be really interesting to see, you know, what they do. But it's good to see that at least the Forest board. I mean, obviously they haven't signed anyone yet, but. That are trying to back them, are at least trying to say they're trying to get into the Premier League.
Hopefully they can actually trust a manager for a period of time for once.
Well,
because
she earned it. It's just
Karanka arguably earned it. He got sacked.
Karanka
was in the playoffs, so he got sacked. I mean, they had a really good run of form.
They weren't as good as they've been under Lamouchi.
No, but I don't. But the point I'm trying to make is that the instability at the club, you can go through 10 managers in 10 years. That's not.
You're not getting much long-term play.
Either way, you've been really rubbish at recruitment and hired 10 awful managers, or you've not given them enough time, or both.
Yeah, I agree. There is something different when you go to the City Ground. Just the people there, there's a lot more optimism this season, and even like online, than there ever has been at Forest.
Well, the thing about Forest is they're expanding the stadium, and the fan base is there for the Premier League. I mean, they would sell out the City Ground every week if they're in the Premier League. They do sell it out quite a lot for a Championship team now. They've got the second highest attendance in the division. They're about 28,000 behind Leeds. So they're obviously, you know, no club is big enough to deserve to go up. But in terms of that sort of fan base and support, then Forest is definitely a big club.
Yeah, 100%. What is good for them is that those around them haven't really done any business of such. Some have, like, for example, Fulham have made Cavalera permanent, but he was already there.
And they've signed a centre-back today and a keeper.
Oh, well, that hadn't...
And they were finally able to register a centre-back they got in the summer after the window closed.
Well, apart from Fulham, nobody's been strengthening around them. So the business that they will do will only increase their strength.
In terms of the Championship going forwards, do you see anybody leapfrogging Leeds or West Brom into the top
two
places?
They've got enough of a gap that it's unlikely.
It's interesting.
They've got a 6-point gap over Brentford in third.
West Brom.
It's not quite a 14-point gap, wherever it is now, is
it? Yeah, isn't it? It's not. Mm. 17 with a, if we win our game in hand. That's Liverpool talk, boys.
17, bloody hell. Yeah.
Matt Webb trying to talk about anything but what should be talked about on the Thursday Sports Show. But West Brom, interestingly, no wins in five, leads one win in five, and suddenly the gap, which was pretty big.
I remember a few weeks ago, the Christmas period, they had a 3-3 draw with Cardiff, and I thought that was a game that sort of turned momentum for them, because it meant that, you know, it was a game they were 3-0 up and should have won.
Yeah.
And they drew 3-3.
It can kind of just happen with Bielsa teams, where they can just get weird results because it's so binary in terms of attack, in terms of win or lose. There's not much where we're drawing.
And West Brom, a few games ago, losing, I think it was to Reading, and that was a terrible, terrible defeat for them. Just sort of weird sort of results like that. And it leaves the table as 53 points West Brom, 52 for Leeds United, 46 Brentford, 45 Fulham, 44 Forest, with a game in hand on all the teams above, and Sheffield Wednesday on 42. Forest, 3 wins out of their last 5. Decent Christmas
period. And to be fair, their next game, Forest, is, I believe, is against Luton, who are bottom of the table.
The championship is a slog. That's the biggest thing.
Mm. Yeah. I know. I think what did show was actually, I think, was the Chelsea game when they played Chelsea in the FA Cup, which was, I like to see that. It's like when Leeds played Arsenal. I like to see, how is this team doing?
And particularly when they don't just roll over for the big side, where they're actually trying.
They did lose 2-0, but it was 2-0, but it wasn't an apoplectic.
They had a VAR decision not going that way as well.
And it's always where it was 2-0, but it wasn't 2-0, and there was no chance in it.
Yeah,
it's partly just Chelsea have the talent to get goals, and Forest don't.
Yeah, and the only thing I think that what's going to hold Forest back is that they just have weird results, like.
Well, it's the problem where you can't get goals. You can just end up dominating a site and everything but a score sheet.
Yeah, they lost against Huddersfield 2-1, and then just the game before that. Yeah, Sheffield Wednesday are on the up, to be fair, but they lost 4-0 at home, and then they lost a game against Hull 2-0 away. And this is like, that's such a weird set of results. You would expect them to pick up at least.
The nature of Forest, sort of, for the last 10-year period,
nature of the championship,
has been these inconsistent results. And Callum's right, championship season, it's worth remembering.
It's 42 games.
46 games, I think.
Yeah, 42
games. Everyone's got. There's a pretty high floor in terms of how good the worst teams are. So every game is a bit of a battle. It's a very physical league.
Yeah.
It just takes a toll. So you get off. It's not necessarily at the end of the season you fade, it's just you get random results in the middle.
Well, it's like you look at sort of Huddersfield right just above the relegation zone. Obviously, they're in the Premier League last season, so it doesn't take much to sort of fall from grace. Derby, you know, in the playoff final last season, they're now had an awful season, only 10 points above the relegation zone, 17th.
The issue with getting a lot of lone players.
Yeah,
true. Very true.
The thing that worries me about Forest is, we've only got a couple minutes before the break, so I have to keep this kind of short, is that their goal difference is 9, which is quite a lot worse than those around them. It kind of shows that, you know, they've only scored 35. And it kind of...
That's the big thing. It's the goal scored, which means that if you're not scoring, it means that you have no margin.
Yeah, then when they win...
You have to be on it.
When they win, they only win by 1-0
or 2-1, isn't it, usually?
So then if you don't quite get it right, you draw or you lose.
I mean, it's very simple. I think if Forest don't sign a striker in this transfer window, they don't go up.
I think it is that binary, to be fair. I think it's going to be a tough, tough battle. I wouldn't be surprised if they finish something like 7th. I don't know yet. I feel like a lot of their, you know, when you look to expected goals, they are overperforming in that regard. Quite a lot in their games, and that is something that I know
you can only do for so long.
Exactly, and that is going to come up to haunt them, I think, eventually. And it's not like they play a system which is set to beat expected. Well, it kind of is.
You can't beat expected goals.
So worrying times is effectively what
Unless
we're trying to
it's a signal, they need to change.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, they need to sign a striker. I think is what it boils down to.
Plain and simple.
Okay, after that Forest talk, you know, it was cut a bit short, but we'll definitely be bringing you more of that next week, along with County Panthers, all of that great news. I'm joined here by Jeffrey from Nigerian Sock, and this is in the wake of the racist incident at the Bulgaria versus England game, a game which has come under a lot of controversy for racism,
and a lot of abuse towards the Bulgarian fans, Bulgarian president, and the Bulgarian manager, two of which have been resigned or sacked in the past weeks. I think to start this, I'd just like to know your reactions to the racist abuse of the game. Like, are you surprised? Are you shocked? Or is it something that, you know, we've come to expect over the last 20 years or so?
I would say, firstly, like, I'm not really that shocked about what's happened because, you know, it's been happening. It's not necessarily been happening that so much in England, but in terms of outside England, places like Italy, it's been happening over the, like, past couple of months quite recently. So the fact that it happened, I wasn't so shocked that it came out. I was shocked that the fact that England, prior to that, already brought out a statement about what they would do if they had that sort of abuse. And the fact that, despite the fact that they made that statement, that they still received the abuse, that part was shocking, to be honest.
Do you commend the players on how they reacted in terms of, like, Tyrone Mings, for example? You know, took it very professionally, very well. Players like Harry Kane, the manager, all went up to the referee and said, look, we've been hearing this abuse, we'd like to go through this sort of new protocol, with inverted quotes, because this has been a protocol since 2009. This is the first time it's actually been used. So are you commending the players, or do you think they should have gone further? They should have actually, after the second time, they should have just gone off, maybe taken it into their own hands a little bit?
Quite recently, I heard, like, an interview from Clamara, and he talks about how he liked the response as well. And I kind of agree with their response of staying on and playing, finishing the game, because, you know, as he said as well, he said if they left, you'd have let them win. And the fact that the abuse is only because they don't want black football players on the pitch. And if they do leave, then the racists have succeeded their goal. So them staying really, like, proves them wrong, that despite all of that, like, you can't stop us from playing a football, what we love to do, which is really good to see.
Yeah, I mean, we went on to win 6-0, so it's clearly, you know, that's the way that a lot of people have been praising, you know, John Barnes, Ian Wright, etc., saying if we beat them 6-0, you know, we're proving them wrong, we're proving we can almost go above this. I completely agree. But in terms of combating the racism in maybe the longer term, should there be harsher punishments? I mean, in the Montenegro game just a few months ago, when Sterling was racially abused, Montenegro got fined £20,000 and had to play two games behind closed doors. But that's not really going to affect them at all in the long run. After the two games behind the closed doors have been played, these fans can come back in, they can racially abuse the players all over again. Is it a case of, I mean, we were talking at Euro and Sport the other day, and we thought maybe it should be like almost 2 years of, or, you know, a year, 2 years of the team just shouldn't play full stop, or they should be kicked out of competitions or something that, you know, really impacts the players and the fans.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of talk about how to deal with the issue and different opinions. People are saying the government should get more involved, and how players should react as well to leave the pitch. I think a lot of it deals with the people who are actually abusing the players, and how they should be punished as well. I think that a lot has to do with education and how people are bringing people up. You know, racist people don't come from, are not, like, born racist. They are, you know, they're taught racism. That's the kind of thing. So you have to educate those people. So I think a kind of thing where maybe, like, they should be like a straight, I think that there already is, but like a straight ban, like, of people who are abusing players on the pitch, like, straight. Like, it should be very strict in that sense, and they should be a very conscious effort to have people in the stands looking out for these people who are racially abusing people, or even if they're in groups, to, like, make sure that is stamped out completely.
No, it's a very good point. But in terms of this is something that, you know, is, I mean, in the game against Bulgaria, there was talk that the stewards themselves were actually part of this entire thing. They refused to stop. They refused to stop the racists. They were too lax, maybe, in their abilities to stop it, and they've been widely condemned by UEFA, among others. You know, should we be doing maybe more background checks on stewards? Should we be asking FAs to, you know, go into more detail on this institutionalized racism, which there clearly is? Should there be more measures to make these, like the Bulgarian FA, all they've done really is get rid of their president. You know, this is institutional all the way down. They got rid of the manager after his horrific comments after the game. You know, is this something that we should be holding them, the FA themselves, more accountable to?
100%, because after, like you just said, the stewards, they were lax in letting this kind of abuse happen. So in that case, you would really just blame the people who are in authority, because they have they authorize those people to be on the stands and, you know, look after the safety of the players and also watch what they're doing as well in the stands. So in that sense, they should be like a firm punishment for the countries like the FA or like Bulgaria to not have that kind of abuse, maybe give them a ban from competitions, as you said. So that would definitely work, in my opinion, yeah.
Yeah, and I want to go back to one of your earlier points that I want to pick up on the education. You know, the president of UEFA has come out in the past week and said, you know, footballing associations can only realistically go so far in their tackle against racism. They need to work with governments in a sort of two-pronged attack of education and deterrence, and in order to combat racism. You know, Kick It Out have been releasing educational resources, adverts, etc., all things completely for free for people to people to learn and understand. And there's been, you know, obviously it's not perfect in England, but it's certainly gone down somewhat. Is that something that other countries need to adopt as well?
Yeah, I think England has done really well in terms of the level of abuse has been quite minimal compared to other places in Europe. As I say, like Italy, for example, there's a lot of constant abuse to black players in Italy that's almost become the norm in that sense. In terms of the education, like how I said, like a lot of good organizations like Kick Out have done a lot in educating players, in educating people on being respectful when they understand and trying to kick out racism. But yeah, you just have the governing bodies like the UEFA and the FA need to work together with all these organizations who combat these society issues, because really racism isn't just a football thing, is in society as well, just to work together with them to try and bring together like a good program that educates people on how to be respectful towards other people and really make it strict when that kind of abuse does happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's another really good point. I'd like to, we've been talking a lot about UEFA, and I think a lot of people in the media have been giving them actually quite a lot of credit for the three-step protocol. It seems to be praised, like recently, by Gareth Southgate's come out and said, you know, he thinks this kind of thing can work. I personally, can you not level some criticism at UEFA/FIFA and be like, this is 2019, how has it taken, you know, 30, 40, 50 years of constant abuse of black players or, you know, minority players in general to come up with something that works? Surely this should have been done in the past.
I think UEFA as a governing body as well, inside the organisation, the people who are in charge should kind of freshen it up a little bit in terms of the rules and regulations that are there. There are a couple of things that are in the regulations that are quite outdated and football have moved past it. So I think that is one of those things that they should look at it again and see, and seeing the uprising, because this is, I wouldn't, it's quite recent, or the way the social media has made it is like blown out a lot more than the passing years. I'm sure there have been these kind of issues in the past few years, but now it's been blown out. I think due to that fact, there needs to be a way to make sure it's completely stamped out, because racism in football doesn't just happen on the pitch as well, it happens online, because fans, they come on Twitter, they come on all these social media platforms and they abuse the players. So it's definitely not a nice thing to see, and there should be a way that UEFA needs to figure out a modern way to, you know, stamp out racism and fully stamp it out.
Yeah, I mean, would you agree with something that's been touted recently is almost a verification sort of feature on Twitter to say, you know, we need these people who are abusing people anonymously, we need to take that anonymity almost away, to be honest, to make sure that, because people are unlikely to abuse people as much if they've taken away their anonymity. And, you know, this could almost help football clubs. If they're seeing the racism by their own people with tickets, season tickets, they might be able to, you know, rescind them, give them to others who won't be racist, you know, put people on blacklist for racism, etc. Is that something you could see as working, or is that maybe too Orwellian?
Yeah, I think that would definitely work, in terms of getting people to be verified before they can have an account, because you have all these people who are just abusing black players online. And another way that I thought that could help the issue is also to have a stricter, firmer punishment. So if if you're verified, for example, on a social media platform, they have all your details, all your contact details, and this person might have a job, and in this, and just for the fact that they abuse someone on that plays football, a black player, they could lose their job and lose certain things in their life that they wouldn't necessarily risk. So that would be a smart way to deter any kind of abuse. But at the same time, we still need to educate people on these kind of issues. So even at home, it doesn't happen.
Yeah, it's something that is, you know, disastrous to many players' careers. We've touched on England a little bit. I'd like to go back to it. You know, the players have been praised, the fans have been praised. They were singing chants like, you know, Sterling scored against the racists, things like that. You know, have we maybe been skating over a little bit of England's sort of role in all of this, in terms of just in the past year or so, we've had the Raheem Sterling with the Chelsea fan, we've had Aubameyang in the North London derby, we've had, you know, Mohamed Salah being racially abused, people suggesting, you know, he's a bomber. You know, these are things all by England fans, and we're raising sort of the flag, saying, you know, we are the fight against racist. You know, we can look at ourselves and be like, we're not perfect as well.
Yeah, I think there's always room for improvement. I think England itself, as a whole, has probably done well in terms of limiting that kind of abuse. But it still does happen. Like, it's, people say, like, you can't fully kick out racism, because they're always going to be the 1% or 1% that are still having those views and outdated views. So as much as you try and kick it out of the game, there will still be those tiny incidents where people are just uneducated and they make those kind of comments, and it's still unacceptable. But I think compared to other places, England has done quite a good job at it.
Yeah, I think I'll turn attention a little bit now towards more grassroots kind of football. This is something that there's not a lot of research, there's not a lot of media attention towards it, but I was just really interested over the past week, in a Yeovil Town game, which is in the Conference Division, players walked off due to racist abuse. You know, the crowd couldn't have been more than a couple of hundred people. You know, this is something that surely should be praised from the Yeovil point of view, but is it something that maybe, we were talking before about, you know, you've played a little bit of football before this, you know, is this something that, one, you've experienced, or two, if you haven't, is this something that maybe we're not drawing enough attention to? If you know, this is something that players being abused from you know, younger ages all the way to the top.
Yeah. So I think growing up as a black male specifically, you do experience some form of racism. Sometimes it's not as bad as some other people may face. I personally haven't experienced the level of abuse that some other people have faced in playing football when I was younger. But I would say this about grassroots: I say they don't have the same kind of attention that Premier League clubs and all these other clubs that are on national television get. So the racism that they receive almost goes unnoticed because the media is not reporting it, and people who can go and watch the games quietly where there's no attention can go ahead and abuse those black players and kind of mess up their confidence, things like that, and they will essentially have no punishment. So maybe the FA needs to get people who are also looking out in those areas for people who are abusing black players, so they cannot like lose out on talent, because I think that confidence is a very key thing in football, that if you don't have it, you're not able to perform well, and you see it happen to a lot of players as well.
Yeah, completely. I mean, I'm going to move on now maybe from more of the overt racism that we've been talking about, you know, on Twitter, online, and a grassroots, and in the Premier League and internationally, to, again, social media. Recently, this is a very controversial topic, is recently, you know, Benjamin Mendy and his friend Bernardo Silva have come out with a very controversial, you know, photos. You know, is it this sort of, some people saw it as borderline racism, some people saw it as really overt racism. Is this something we should be stamping down upon, the more, you know, casual sort of racism within the game? You know, there have been chants about Lukaku in the past year or so. These type of things we also need to stamp out as well? Or is this just banter?
In the case of the Benjamin Mendy and Bernardo Silva incident, I think, in my opinion, that it was a joke between them. I think Bernardo Silva, Silva didn't mean anything behind it. I don't think it was intentional racism. I think he just saw something from his childhood, and maybe because of it was related to him in Portugal, he related to Benjamin Mendy in his own way. But it also does show that there's some ignorance in it, in the fact that he didn't realize how this looks in terms of in posting it on his social media platform. If he posted it to Benjamin Mendy privately, then it could have been something where if Mendy had a problem with it, then they would have had a conversation and he would have been able to educate him. Because I personally don't think he himself is a racist. He's a racist, but I think maybe he has some sort of ignorance to some issues, and most people do. So it's not necessarily his fault. So stamping that aspect of that aspect in society would be hard, but it just needs to keep on working at it.
Yeah, that's a very eye-opening view and an account, I'd say, of that story, because it's been so divisive in the news. I'd just like to end this interview with the last question, maybe positive or negative, depending on which way you take it. Racism within football, and maybe sport as a whole, is this something that is going to be completely solved in the future, whether it takes 100 years or 1,000 years, or is this something where there's always going to be maybe a small minority who are going to maybe ruin it for the rest of us? I'd just like to hear your thoughts.
In looking at it in the future perspective, I'm thinking about how where we were and where we came from. So Graham Kamara talks about how he experienced racism when he used to play footballs in the 80s and 90s, and then he compared it to how the abuse is and how it was back then. And he did say the abuse in England is minimal, but the sort of abuse that the players received up there in Bulgaria was about the same level of abuse that he received when he was playing back in the day. I would say that in some places it's changed, but in some places it's changing too slowly. And on that, I think in a few years, the level of racism, maybe in this country, almost will be completely wiped out, because I think there's a lot of diversity in England and a lot of acceptance. But in other areas, they need to catch up more quickly, so everyone is, you know, there's a lot of equality and everyone is given a fair chance in society.